por parte de un por ahí un conocido entrevistador de Televisa. Tuve que decir el nombre, no queremos hacer comerciales acá. Pero bueno, pasemos a escuchar primero este audio.
Un órgano de propaganda del oficialismo mexicano.
Oficialismo mexicano.
Alejandro Murat, quien fue nombrado el 1 de diciembre por el presidente de la República director del Infonavit, pues nada, que deja la dirección del Infonavit. ¿Por qué? Porque quiere ser gobernador de Oaxaca, donde ya lo fue alguna vez su papá José Murat. Y le aprecio a Alejandro Murat que me haya aceptado esta llamada. Alejandro, ¿cómo estás? Buenas tardes.
Joaquín, muy bien, gracias. Agradecerte mucho esta gran oportunidad y este espacio para platicar contigo y con tu auditorio.
A ver, ¿por qué quieres ser gobernador de Oaxaca?
Mira, Joaquín, yo creo que hoy hemos visto en esta administración, y por supuesto ahí está el Congreso y la sociedad civil, a dejar de ser testigos de nuestro presente y de nuestro futuro y empezar a ser protagonistas. Eso es para mí lo que significan las grandes reformas estructurales y el reto que hemos enfrentado en conjunto como sociedad y que hemos demostrado que se pueden lograr grandes acuerdos a favor de México. Me parece que hoy, en ese sentido, Oaxaca tiene también grandes retos, pero también tiene esa gran oportunidad para poder, de una vez por todas, demostrar que sí se pueden hacer las cosas de manera diferente y empezar también en Oaxaca a ser protagonistas de nuestro presente y nuestro futuro.
A ver, Alejandro Murat, ¿cómo le planteaste al presidente que te quería ser gobernador de Oaxaca y qué te dijo y cuándo lo hiciste?
Bueno, mira, compartirte, Joaquín, esto, pues primero que nada agradecer ampliamente la gran oportunidad, primero que me brindó el señor presidente Enrique Peña Nieto y especialmente los más de 19 millones de trabajadores que son derechohabientes del Infonavit. Su posibilidad de que me depositaran su confianza y darles resultados ha sido sin duda la responsabilidad y el honor más grande de mi
vida. Pero ¿cómo se lo dijiste?
Bueno, pues hoy había un anhelo, había una inquietud y bueno, pues consulté si había esa oportunidad para poder seguir pues ese sueño de poder tener una aspiración, porque eso es lo que es hoy, nada más. Habrá que esperar, por supuesto, los tiempos que marque la ley, que es lo más importante, y bueno, en función a eso, ganarnos lo más importante, que es la confianza, primero pues de los tiempos que marque en mi partido, y después hoy hemos visto una sociedad activa, sí, proactiva.
¿Pero qué te dijo el presidente?
Bueno, pues que buscara, que tomara la decisión que yo considerara la más oportuna, y en función a eso, pues estaba agradecido de que yo pudiera participar y bueno, pues que buscara ahora esta definición de
¿Cuándo lo viste?
¿Perdón?
¿Cuándo lo viste para tratarle esto?
Bueno, comentamos el punto hace algunos días, hice la propuesta y bueno, pues me dijeron, bueno, pues busca tu anhelo y tu sueño.
Ahora, el que tu papá esté hablando con Alejandro Murat, el que tu papá José Murat haya sido gobernador de 98 a 2004 con toda la carga que tiene de amigos y sobre todo de enemigos, ¿te aporta o te resta?
Mira, Joaquín, yo creo que en la vida hay que respetar y querer a los padres y a los que...
No, sí, pero no hablo del cariño, eso está fuera de duda, no. Yo te hablo de la política, que es implacable. ¿No?
Y esto, claro, es una gran pregunta, y déjame nada más concluir. Yo creo que cada persona es su propio hombre o su propia mujer. Cada persona debe tener la gran capacidad de construir su destino y de pelear por sus sueños. Y en ese sentido, bueno, pues hoy hay un hombre que se llama Alejandro Murat, que ha dado pasos importantes. Primero, yo creo que lo más importante en la vida es que lo que te acredita a ti son tus resultados. Y déjame compartirte solo algunos datos en el caso, por ejemplo, de mi última responsabilidad. Esta administración es la administración que mayor número de créditos en cualquier lapso comparativo ha dado en su historia, más de 1 millón.
Sí, pero no me vayas a hacer, Alejandro, por favor, un informe de gobierno. Lo que te estoy preguntando es, ¿cómo corta el que tu papá haya sido gobernador de Oaxaca en tu proyecto? Porque digo, pues ahí además, como son los oaxaqueños, son más bravos que nada, ¿sí?
Por supuesto.
¿Te aporta o te resta?
No, yo, si siempre me va a aportar. Yo creo que es un hombre que ha sido gente comprometida, pero él ya jugó su destino. Él es parte de la historia. Hoy debemos de ver el presente. Y el presente lo tendremos que construir juntos con la sociedad civil, y esa es la que al final del día tendrá que tomar una decisión. Tenemos que ser respetuosos, y en ese sentido, pues yo tendré que apegarme primero a los tiempos que marque la ley, pero segundo, hacer un gran esfuerzo para tener los argumentos adecuados, pues para ganarme la confianza de la gente, pero eso será en el momento que marque, por supuesto.
¿Qué papel va a jugar José Murat en la campaña de Alejandro Murat?
Ninguno. Él es exgobernador y tendrá que jugar el papel de jugar, de haber ya jugado su momento.
Bueno, acabamos de escuchar una entrevista que se le hizo a Alejandro Murat. ¿Y quién es Alejandro Murat Hinojosa? Es el hijo del exgobernador José Murat, que estuvo fungiendo desde 1998 hasta el 2004. El exgobernador acusado de malversación de fondos y con propiedades en Nueva York. Esto no lo decimos nosotros, lo dijo el New York Times por unas investigaciones que se realizaron.
Sí, Alejandro Murat tomó en la madrugada del jueves 1 de diciembre posesión de el nombramiento de gobernador electo del estado de Oaxaca, y bueno, ya de gobernador del estado de Oaxaca, en medio de una crisis pues torrencial sobre su estado, y es un tipo que lleva en la sangre la herencia del viejo y con la cara del engaño del nuevo PRI, y para mi punto de vista es de los personajes que tiene el dedazo para ser candidato presidencial, no en el 2018, sino en la siguiente.
Y aquí en esta entrevista nunca concreta respuestas, y luego incluso dice que se siente orgulloso de haber sido representante, director general del Infonavit. Él invirtió 724 millones de pesos con una empresa española, Abengoa de México. Entonces, y la empresa española provocó que el Infonavit perdiera 400 millones de pesos, y estos datos provienen directamente de la coordinación de auditoría interna del Infonavit. Bueno, pues queríamos nada más dar a entender quién es el nuevo gobernador del estado de Oaxaca.
O sea, queremos reiterar de que el oficialismo mexicano es muy predictible.
Sí.
Y perpetúa la misma fórmula. En los últimos dos minutos que le quedan de vida a este programa, ¿qué podemos decir de lo que le espera a México este año en los próximos días? Porque a mí me decía Hernández Noroña de que se está buscando presionar a hacer ingobernable México para que se vaya Peña Nieto antes de 2018.
Exacto.
Entonces,
¿con qué finalidad?
Bueno, entonces quiere decir de que si se intensifica más el asunto, la desobediencia civil, las manifestaciones, arrestos, los policías y los soldados dejan la gasolinera, se van a reprimir gente en otras partes, se hacen arrestos preventivos bajo las nuevas leyes antiterroristas con otro nombre que criminalizan la protesta social en México, inclusive un policía te puede acusar de que lo insultaste, que lo intimidaste, se sintió miedo porque lo estabas mirando tú con una pancarta, que lo tomó, le insulté hasta el honor de su familia con una pancarta, etcétera. Criminalizar la protesta social en ese contexto que se parece a las leyes que impuso Estados Unidos después de que tomó la nación árabe de Irak. En ese contexto, ¿qué podemos anticipar de México? Pues cualquier cosa puede ocurrir, ¿no? Entonces, ¿qué le decimos a nuestra radioaudiencia? Esté pendiente, nosotros estaremos informándoles de la manera más honesta, lo más pronta posible, sobre lo que está pasando en México, con las ramificaciones predictibles que tiene ya con el capital estadounidense, canadiense y español, que parece ser los que están metidos más allá en el asunto del capital, y qué podemos nosotros esperar de que nuestra audiencia mexicana, oaxaqueña, que está acá, los latinoamericanos que se interesan por lo que pasa en México, uno de los tercera o cuarta potencia en América Latina, cómo ellos van a asegurarse que en la próxima recaudación de fondos programas como este van a subsistir, van a preservarse y van a ser fortalecidos con el apoyo popular, porque estamos en esto trabajando juntos, ¿no?
Sí, claro. donde no hay más que libertad de expresión aquí y la verdad absoluta sobre la información, ¿no?
Queremos enviarle un afectuoso saludo a un radioescucha, que a un amiguito, un compañero de trabajo, a Moisés, que es originario de nuestra hermana República de Guatemala.
Hola, Moisés.
Un saludo, un
feliz año.
Feliz año, querido Moisés. Bueno, pues nos despedimos de este programa y pues queremos agradecerles a nuestros amigos y coordinadores. Le agradecemos a Lizeth Tapia y al compañero Toshlis. Muy buenas noches, compañeros.
Esto fue Senderos de Oaxaca.
Desde lo más profundo de nuestras raíces y nuestras prácticas tradicionales.
¿Sugerencias y comentarios?
Visite nuestra página de Facebook.
KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles.
Yeah, this is Captain Fred saying you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, best fucking radio station in Santa Cruz. Peace.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, or the stream of Free Radio, it's Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, and in the studio with me for half an hour, and maybe to return, he has other engagements, is Councilmember-elect Christopher Crone. But first, a little music to soften us both up so we can come on fresh as a daisy. Don't go away. Call-in number here is 427-3772. Let the phone keep ringing until I deign to answer it, and we'll get to the calls and so forth insofar as we can in 30 minutes. Stay tuned.
I went down to Chance Bodega, a funky corner store. I walked in and what I saw, it knocked me to the floor. Lots of jars full of cigars at $30 each. A neon sign, imported wine, and microcreamery cheese. And there's no more single cigarettes, and no more bar to be here. The writing's on the wall, my friends, the end is drawing near. SUVs are everywhere, old trucks cannot be found. This is not the place where I grew up, I don't know my own hometown. Just look and you can see it, you can watch the city die. Stadiums got new losses, and it's enough to make you cry. Where once there was a mural, there's an ad designer. Yeah, the city that I knew is gone, this city is for sale. Apartments, condos, condos, they burn down cheap hotels. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to design. It's full of rocks, it's a mountaintop, and clouds go rolling by. Got Alpine cuisine, I saw limousines, and it's full of guys. Aye. Just look and you can see it, you can watch the city die. Say we got new losses, it's enough to make you cry. Where once there was a mural, there's an ad designer. Hell, the city that I knew was gone, the city is for sale. Apartments on the condos, they burn down cheap hotels. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell.
Yeah, welcome to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. An unusual beginning, but that's what we're starting with today. You're tuned to the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org. We still have no computer, no transmitter site, so we are on the stream, but not on the air, which is a pity. And hopefully we will be getting back on the air in about 3 or 4 weeks, because we may have found a spot. But if you have suggestions as to where we might put up our transmitter antenna, like the second story of a house or a tree in a yard, any place, preferably actually on the east side, out toward Live Oak, but anywhere in Santa Cruz is a possibility, give a call to my phone number, 423-4833, and I'll pass it on to the collective. That's 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, which is also a line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a group that I work with and write about and sign on to and so forth. In the studio with me this evening, I have a special guest, Rebecca, also known as Bertha G. Hey, Rebecca, say hello.
Hello.
Say hello again.
Hello.
Okay, let's see if we got you there. So, and for a third time, say hello.
Hello.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Try to adjust that mic. Now, Rebecca, I ran into you a few days ago, and, you know, you talked about your life, in turn part of your life, which had to do with being outside, or at least having to survive in a vehicle, which is housing for a number of people in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
And you are out of that at the present time, or you're still struggling? What's happening with that?
No, I'm out of the car at the present time, yes, but it is a temporary situation, and not sure when I will actually, or how much longer I'll actually have a place to be.
Got to have iron hands to deal with these microphones. Sorry for the delay, folks. Let's see now. So, you are... how long were you in a vehicle?
Well, in the past 3 years, I've been in my vehicle five different times.
Wow.
And the fifth time was the longest period of time. It was 8 months.
And this was all in Santa Cruz or elsewhere?
Yes.
What prompted these vehicular excursions?
Well,
if you wish.
I've been in Santa Cruz for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up here after college in 1998 and became like one of the first Pilates instructors in the area back then.
And explain for all us somewhat less familiar folks what a Pilates instructor is.
It is an instructor of a technique called Pilates, spelled P-I-L-A-T-E-S. That was the name of the man who developed it and invented it, basically all the exercises and the techniques behind it, back in World War I with the bedridden soldiers and whatnot. I became certified to teach it to other people.
What is it exactly?
It's a fitness technique.
So it's for health and improving your strength.
It's yes, exactly. So anyways, you know, I've been pushed out of Santa Cruz a couple of times over the past 20 years. There was a time, the very first time that it happened, there was about 10 of my friends that were also being evicted from their apartments so that the rents could be raised and rented to richer people.
Has this been a kind of a pattern as to why on each of these five occasions you found yourself homeless have been a raising of the rents?
No, this particular time in the past 3 years was not because of the rents were already so raised. The biggest problem was that the jobs that I was having at the time, which I did enjoy as a direct support professional and a caregiver, they only pay minimum wage. And honestly, 3 years ago, when I started, I was only making $8.25 an hour. And then finally, the minimum wage went up to $10 an hour. And so since then, over the past year, I've definitely been looking for jobs that are even more than $13 an hour because I have to work an incredible amount of overtime in order to still make any kind of significant money to be able to put a deposit down on a place to live.
Well, I think you mentioned you did some house cleaning work as well recently that may have tired you out today, right?
Yes, that is my recent current job, is house cleaning.
What does that pay?
It's starting at $15 an hour.
And what does that take out of you, or what satisfaction, if maybe, I wouldn't know if I'd use that word, but does it give any satisfaction to you, or is it simply, the need to make the rent?
It is, number one, the need to make the rent, because it would not be at all what I would, I was a Pilates instructor for years and years, and I went through some certain situations that affected my health, my blood pressure, and I been taking off the last 3 years from putting any effort into gaining any Pilates clientele, trying to heal myself and get my blood pressure down. So.
Now, is that a big thing in Santa Cruz? Is Pilates something that a number of people are looking for instruction in?
Well, I'm not 100% sure because I haven't really put much time into finding out. When I first started 20 years ago, I put a couple flyers up, and in a month, I had a full schedule working out of my home. And things are much different now. It's gone through this big boom, and there's Pilates studios almost on every corner. And I was away for a little while. It was one of those times I got pushed away and tried to find a home and a job elsewhere because Santa Cruz was too expensive. Really, it ended up 6.5 years later, I came back. Because even though places rent might be a little less expensive elsewhere, at the time that this happened, too, it was like 2007, I think, when almost everybody's home was going into foreclosure. And there were no jobs. There was like one job opening with 1,000 applicants, and so ended up all the way in Indianapolis, Indiana, before I finally made it back to Santa Cruz, and that was 5 years ago. And then there was, unfortunately, something that the only thing I will say about it is there was a breakup. And that's when I ended up going it alone, and I found out that my high blood pressure was really bad, and I ended up settling for a job, a minimum wage paying job that I still enjoyed, it's kind of down my alley, caregiving and whatnot, but it turns out it's not at all. I don't want to do it for the rest of my life. Is mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say. So, mm-hmm. I made the jump over into house cleaning, and it's very much more satisfactory because I get to work by myself. And the biggest problem is, even though it's $15 an hour, my hours are very little. But I'm also working on something else as well. That I don't necessarily want to talk about.
No problem. Mm-hmm. We will not dig too deep
here. Yeah.
But let's talk about, the main reason I invited you here has to do with, living in a vehicle,
right,
and the difficulties of doing that, or the joys of doing that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess the joy is you don't have...
absolutely no joy in it.
At least you don't have a landlord. I guess that's the only joy I can think of. But there's no joy. Tell us about the lack of joy.
I think, in my case, probably a little bit different than most, because I had to do it, the last 3 years all by myself. Like, I had nobody. I really didn't even have any friends calling me or anything. So thank goodness for my dog. And there were other things where I was being kind of harassed by whomever, it doesn't even matter, but it made things more difficult to stay in my car because... And then I started getting paranoid that I was being followed, which I might have been being followed. I don't know. Just going from place to place, I was very thankful all the time that I had my car, of course.
Now, you were in your car, you were in a car, 10 or 15 years ago, as well as a few years ago, right?
No. So this is the first time ever that I have not had a place to live.
Oh, okay. So
in the last 3 years.
Right. So
you've been five different times.
You've only been homeless in the last 3 years.
Right. Correct.
And
when you say
five different times, you mean in the period of the last 3 years.
Correct. Yeah.
Has it changed at all during that period in terms of during those five different times? In each of those periods, were you in your vehicle?
Yes. Each of those times, I was in my vehicle. I hated it every single time. Sometimes we're, one time I was stuck with a expired registration and my license suspended. That was a horrible 5 months because I had my car, yes, but I couldn't drive it anywhere. And I did have a job, so I was just trying to stay close to my job wherever I went. And, so things changed a little bit this last time. I purposely decided to stay in my car as long as I needed to, because I was tired. I didn't know what there was actually other attempts at trying to leave Santa Cruz, trying to save up my money and move to Fresno or somewhere where I could take my money and go buy or not buy, but rent a one bedroom apartment for $6.95 a month, and I would have the deposit and the first month's rent.
And is that still your objective?
No.
You've altered course.
Yeah. It altered itself.
How did that happen, if you wish to say?
I'm not exactly sure. Because I've been doing this all alone, I haven't had anybody to, give me some kind of advice of, what I should do. I just knew that I needed to be practical because it's the year of the monkey. And I knew that it was going to be, what was I saying?
We're asking why you changed from your Fresno.
When I had the money and I was going to go, there was nothing keeping me here, but I didn't go.
Just too tired to pick up and go?
That might be it, considering...
Fresno before?
No.
So it was a whole new scene.
I knew nobody. I know nobody there. But I also knew that I wasn't, didn't really know anybody here either, even though I'm from here, pretty much from here.
Has it changed at all?
Very, I'm here sitting talking to you.
Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking you might be getting back into the social scene.
No. I don't know. I haven't made any real decisions.
With other people in vehicles?
A couple of them, but they all ended up to where I was kind of scared for my life. Just said went the other way. It's for the same reasons why I don't want to rent a room out of a house with other people in it. The one thing that I actually was thinking about when I knew I was going to be coming here and talking to you was the drug usage in this area. It's scary. I've been writing about it a little bit. I'm a writer. I don't know. Introduced as Rebecca, a.k.a. Bertha G. That's my, my artist name, I guess you could say. And I've written some rhymes about it.
Did you bring any of those with you?
I did.
Let's hear them.
I want to do two. And one was the first one I ever did. written here in Santa Cruz, inspired by a friend of mine who had asked me, you know, well, what is it that you want, you know? And I was like, well, I want peace. I want peace on earth is basically what I said. And anyways, it inspired me to write this one. It's called In My Dreams. And anyways, here it goes. I've put it to the song Dust in the Wind, too, but I won't do it with
you,
Dust
You can sing
in
it
wind.
If you want.
If I can remember the lyrics, I usually have to be reading them. I haven't quite remembered them. Anyways, it's In My Dreams, there are people on the street, loving everyone they meet, always hugging and kissing cheek to cheek, never passing by without a greet, unable to stop moving their feet, because the music's always grooving sweet. In my dreams, there are people all around, getting groovy to that funky sound, because Jaja's lover never lets them down. When they thought they were lost, he came and found. He picked them up and twirled them around, didn't know where they were at when they hit the ground, only that the good feelings were abound. In my dreams, it doesn't matter who is rich or who is fatter. All that matters is that we gather all our friends and climb that ladder to that place of love and laughter. We all know that's what we're after. That place of love and freedom, it could be called the celestial kingdom. It doesn't matter, that's a thing, because no matter what you call it, it'll always bring a smile to your face and make you sing and shout praises to the Most High King that abides in every living being. It could be compared to a rainbow gathering. In any case, that's what's in my dreams.
Is that what's in your dreams?
Hold on, it's not finished yet.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It may seem like just a dream, but I know it's real because of how it feels, and I won't give up no matter what till every soul who's willing and whole finds the way to see the day that we all wake up and see everything's okay, because love exists and the devil's tricks are illusionary tactics to make us think we're on the brink and we're all going to die and we're not good enough to survive. But that's bullshit. I know it. Because even though it seems to be I have a creative personality, I could not imagine one small thing that God might have intended it to be only in my dreams.
Hmm. And what about those dreams? Do you actually dream this kind of stuff?
Oh, not sleeping dreams.
Just daydreams.
You know, I used to. It's been rough being homeless, you know, and not really having any friends and, you know, not really feeling like the people that were around to socialize with were people that I, you know, wanted to have. I don't do drugs, you know.
And you were saying that that was an issue that you've written about.
Oh, yeah. You know, very mildly, because I've kind of just been keeping my mouth shut for the most part. And just going to work and going to work and going to work and letting the year pass, because I didn't know what was going on. And, you know, I'm dealing with issues with my family, too, that know I'm homeless and, you know, haven't attempted to try to help, really. You know, they do monetarily on occasion.
They haven't invited you to crash in the backyard.
Yeah, I was, you know, and not really invited, but ended up in their back of their garage for a little bit, but it was kind of pushed out, and I've been pushed out of their place a couple of times.
The Santa Cruz locals?
No, they're, you know, I won't say where they're at, but, you know, no.
They're in another city.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about, this is something I often talk about on the show, is the police and how they are treating a person sleeping in a vehicle. Have you had any run-ins with them?
I actually think that, you know, people have been, like, calling them about me. they've come at, you know, the time that my car wasn't registered, and my driver's license was suspended. They were called, you know, they got me out of the car, and it was my first time in cuffs because I had my, smoking device sitting there, but as soon as I told them that I had my medical marijuana recommendation, that, you know, they let me go. But they told me that, anyways, this is where I was sleeping, and, you know, it was definitely scared the
piss out of you.
Yeah, for sure. I was shaking, and they almost took my dog. And, you know, my dog's been in the car with me this whole time.
Name of your dog?
Biggie Smalls.
Hey, Biggie Smalls. Okay.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And have you, how have you found it in terms of finding places to park and sleep while you're, you know, struggling to do your job? Is it, have you found some places that are comfortable for you to be, or is it always a matter of moving on?
It's definitely always a matter of moving on. But I did, within the last 8 months, have the opportunity to go, you know, basically everywhere from Aptos to Santa Cruz and find different spots that I felt comfortable and I didn't get harassed by the police, and I didn't. The police were generally actually very kind to me. They weren't mean. I know that's not the case with a lot of people, but luckily in my situation, they, you know,
no tickets.
No tickets. Parking tickets, but the parking tickets weren't even actually, you know, because of this having to sleep in my car either.
How about hassles from neighbors? Would you get much static from them? Or
they didn't know. Nobody knew where I was at.
You kept a low profile.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had about six different spots, maybe, I don't know, five, maybe seven, I don't know, and would find new ones, you know, every night. You drive around, and, you know, I'm lucky in my car, and I had my curtains up. I would put my curtains up.
What about the bathroom situation? That's always a
problem. That was a problem, yeah. There's definitely not enough bathrooms.
The 24-hour bathrooms, only recently have they opened up these two porta potties downtown, and the 24. I guess there was the porta potty over, glorified porta potty that was over at the corner of Front and Laurel Street. I call it the Posner poo poo machine because he's the councilmember. Posner put it in, or he pushed for it. They won't open, and then for a very brief time, for 6 months, they opened up a bathroom across from New Leaf Market in the garages.
But, oh.
Yeah, I didn't tell you, I guess.
No, I didn't get that one.
Why, damn it. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous because you have so many people who are living outside, 1,000 to 2,000 people, some with vehicles, most without.
And that definitely every time I saw that, because eventually I did end up, you know, down in the downtown area.
Because of your job or because of other factors?
Other factors. I was being followed or stalked or something, you know, and I don't want to get into that too much, but I, you know, had to move quite often. Either that or I was paranoid, but probably a little bit of both.
You felt uncomfortable, and so you moved, whatever the situation.
I follow my intuition, and I don't care if it looks like I'm paranoid. I'm going to get out of there, and, you know.
Does your skills with this work that you were doing, and I can't remember the name of it.
Pilates?
I was going to say Patassi, but that ain't it. With Pilates, is that also a self-defense skill?
No, not in the, you know, definition of self-defense of, you know, like martial arts, karate, jiu-jitsu, no.
And have you ever had occasion to have to defend yourself while being homeless?
Actually, no. I was always defending myself in the homes that I was in.
So it was mostly because people you knew had problems with.
Part of the reason why I would end up in my car was because I was being verbally and physically abused by the people. So I would move out, yeah. Like on a moment's notice, I would just be, I'm not giving this person any more of my money.
We're talking to Rebecca, a.k.a. Bertha G., here on the studio. You're tuned to the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and Rebecca's here, dragged off the streets or lured into the studio. You can call in and talk about your experiences if you have some questions or comments, because we have an open line. And the phone number here is 427-3772. 427-3772. Call in if you've got some thoughts. Even on the streets, have you been living in your vehicle? Do you have friends who are in that situation? And also, of course, I've been hitting up on the fact that it's a struggle, kind of the obvious, so it's not really giving anybody any news, but I think people's realities need to be made more manifest generally, because if people realize they're not alone in these situations, that probably many do, although I don't see people getting together to do shit about it, I got to tell you, then maybe they will, with, you know, wages, you know, falling far, far behind rents and costs to live and so forth. Any comments on that? And not expecting you to comment necessarily.
The wages being low and the rents being high.
And the cost of living going up and not, you know, you're not, your wage is not keeping pace with that. Health care, for example, you know. How have you been doing for that? Have you been able to pay health care expenses?
Well, luckily, you know, I did go to the county and applied for assistance, and I got Medi-Cal for a year. So I haven't had to pay for anything, which is lucky because I ended up going to the emergency room twice because of my high blood pressure. you know, I was very highly stressed, and my blood pressure got up at one time at 250 over 140.
That's pretty high there.
Yes, they were saying, I'm surprised you're still alive right now.
How did that feel? In other words, what's the symptom of that, as well as getting, you know, if you have a blood pressure machine?
It's definitely chest pain. It's not pinpointed, but I started feeling pain in my chest, and I did know that was a symptom of a heart attack. And I had known that I had high blood pressure, and I had been attempting to try to remedy it with no high blood pressure medication. And it was almost working until the one place that I was living found out that my landlord was, you know, basically trying to step over the line from landlord-tenant relationship to... you know, and he was leading, you know, so I...
He wanted you.
Yeah, basically, I guess. I don't know. I heard from a friend that somehow thought that we were seeing each other, and I went, I'm out of here. Because that is absolutely...
Why did you avoid medication, if I may ask?
Well, I guess it would stem from, you know, the fact that I'm a Pilates instructor would, you know, is part of it, and the... have tried to live healthily, and I don't like drugs.
Generally speaking. Even those approved by the AMA.
Exactly. And, I mean, I don't even take aspirin. I've never been on an antibiotic. I've never had a prescription filled of any kind for any reason.
From a Christian Science family, perhaps?
No. I don't come from a Christian Science family, but I have done my share of research on...
But when you were a kid, you got medicated by your family, probably, right?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
So they had the same philosophy?
No, actually.
They just didn't want to buy you any medication?
No, I never needed any.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. I never needed any.
Huh.
Yeah. Knock on
wood. The stress of living outside...
But, yeah, well, it's actually the high blood pressure started before the homeless period, which I don't really like to call homeless. I like to call it living in my car. And
my car is my home. Leave me alone. That's what I put it.
I don't like to call homeless people. I like that they should be called just like you don't say disabled people. You say people
with a disability
first, with a disability.
I call people homeless people, or disabled people, but it's more just a shorthand rather than an attempt to stereotype people. We're talking with Rebecca. I'm going to take a musical break, give everybody a chance to, do whatever they want to do. You can step up, get yourself a cup of tea. Actually, I brought along some tea if you want some tea. And I'll be back, so don't go away. And that was Phil Free from Just Kidding, a band that he and Skidmark Bob and Spirit and others, I think it was maybe it was more than the three of them, were going strong with about 20 years ago. I like their stuff, and I'm going to be playing a little bit more of it in the show. However, just calling in is Wes White from, goodness, Salinas. Hey, Wes.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. So you're a man, a survivor of the flagpole community extermination, so to speak, or deportation, and you're working on a Salinas Union of the Homeless and some kind of crazy shit going on around Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah, we're planning to have a few. I'm still hoping you're willing to speak on behalf of Huff and probably your Freedom Radio here. And having people also from Food Not Bombs to Freedom Sleepers up there, you know, Santa Cruz has got a lot worse than Salinas does. So we've been learning from you guys for a while. We're also going to have this guy who makes tiny homes. And, you know, so he'll talk about his World Changers program. And I guess we're going to try to recruit some homeless people. I mean, hopefully this is going to spark some interest in the population down in Chinatown and among the homeless as in general, you know, or poor, you know, just people who are advocates, you know, to really try to break through this idiotic bureaucracy we got, and just say, you know what, where there's a will, there's a way. If, you know, let's legitimize it one way or another. Go ahead and permit them for a week, a month at a time, and just let them be where they're at. Let them get stationary and start having a routine, because it's just crazy the way it's going.
Well, you know, Wes, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I know about a year and a quarter ago, you and Anthony Prince, the attorney, and I don't know, what's his name, Castellano?
Castaneda.
Castaneda, thank you, the Salinas council member. And a lot of people, Diana and a whole bunch of folks were getting together to fight an anti-homeless ordinance, and successfully did, held back that ordinance, actually prompted the creation of a second ordinance, which they used sort of as cover for running people out of the Chinatown encampment.
Exactly.
And people are now coming back to the Chinatown encampment. But that produced the flagpole community, which was people at City Hall, the Salinas City Hall, every night, thanks to you and your endless energy. I can't figure out where you get it. Coming down. Yeah, it's true. And you were able to set up essentially a very almost model-looking tent city there every night, until they destroyed it by creating a third law, under which you are now suffering. Go ahead.
And the rest of the city.
Say again?
I said, and the rest of the city, so it's not just us.
No, yeah, no, you, I'm using the generic you to describe
the
homeless community, you know. I mean, but I guess what interests me is there, what prompted this surge of activism then, and now I sense that, you know, while you're working, like you seem to be working all the time on it, not too many other people are. What do you think is the reason there has been a, to some extent, falling off of energy? And is my sense correct, or is that not actually?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, there's plenty of heart in people and in every community. It's just a matter of directing it. And you know, how do you place the priority of people that you hardly even know for a cause that you still low priority in your life? How do you keep on putting energy into that all the time? You know, you have obligations, you have bills to pay. This doesn't pay. In fact, you end up paying money to help.
Well, Wes, what I'm wondering, though, is why was there... I mean, you had people coming to city council in large numbers, I guess, maybe because the subject was on the agenda of,
right,
you know, further crap.
The biggest deal on that is we got defeated, like you said. I mean, we got killed. We got assassinated. And they bloviated the whole thing, and it was a super secret. I mean, they may as well call it the West White Ordinance, but they didn't. You know, they anti-unlawful camping. And
clarify what that ordinance is again. This is the third ordinance. There were three ordinances, one after another. The first of which you defeated. The second of which actually, it was cover for their clearing Chinatown, but it did allow you to do this camping at night, which we can't do legally here in Santa Cruz. And then thirdly, you had this new ordinance which killed the Flagpole Community Campground passed in September. But what impact has it had on the homeless community of, let's say, of Chinatown? Because there are now homeless people still camping in Chinatown. At least there was 2 weeks ago, and 3 weeks ago, when I visited you, and we sort of had our sit-down. I played that last show. I played the entire, most of the discussion you and I and Anthony Prince and Becky Johnson and Diana and...
Van
also, had planning for this Martin Luther King Day deal and possibly a homeless memorial of the dead in Salinas, and just a general strategy of how to, I guess Anthony Prince talked about it as withdrawing but not surrendering, but to regroup the forces. It's not some nice language, I guess I'm wondering. Talk a little bit about. Has this law that people are suffering under now, is it any different than 2 years ago in other areas of Salinas other than Chinatown? I mean, was it simply this whole thing, a Chinatown-specific law to destroy Chinatown and then to destroy the Flagpole community, but essentially that has had no real shift in the repressive actions or the oblivious actions of police?
Like you said, it was a cover in February to make that new law. And strike the old one, because they knew they were running against common sense and constitutionality, by just saying bulky items. So they had to come up with some kind of compromise. And they just figured nobody would chase the ball fast enough, to really figure it out that it was all a game. And, the nice part was, even though you can only do at night, which they should have just done 24 hours, you could reliably have a safe place to sleep at night. And as they were kicking people out, they promised that they'd be evaluating people and putting people into a program to put them in the house. And they never did a lick at any of that stuff. They never even had anybody go out and assess them before they took everything away, which also presents another problem, because once you uproot them, how do you get back to them even? So their whole plan was fake from the start, and that was half of the point, was you now broke these people, make them whole again, and make good on your word. So they never had any intention. It was all dog and pony show.
Well, let me ask you though again. The question I have is, if you look at the situation of people across the width and breadth of Salinas who are outside or in their vehicles, how it was, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I'm not sure when you began your activities around this. But if you look at that situation, when you began, which I took it was, when did you start getting interested in homeless civil rights and working on these issues?
Probably at the beginning of 2015, I guess. The end of 2014, beginning of 2015.
Uh-huh.
And then when the homeless ordinance passed in September of 2015, it was absurd. I mean, there was only a handful of people there. At the
city council meeting, yeah. Well, but let me ask you, though, based on what you saw, it may have been your focus was simply on this absurd, although very typical, ordinance of city to city. It's sort of like, anti-Negro ordinances in the South or anti-Chinese ordinances in California or anti-Hispanic practices
that
have been followed historically. I'm just wondering, is the situation any worse or any better for homeless people generally, let's say if you take the summer of 2015 now to the spring of 2017, has there been any real change for folks anyway, one way or another? And if so, what has that change been, better or worse, or both?
Probably before that September 2015, there was somewhat of a renaissance era. They would do quarterly sweeps. So it was no big deal, because they'd allow you to come back after they were done.
You're talking about quarterly sweeps in Chinatown, or was that everywhere across the city? I know they. I actually had on my program the director of Dorothy's Place, of the, you know, a social service organization located on the block in Chinatown where people set up their tents. And, you know, I got this sort of, what I probably got the wrong notion, I think I did, of a sort of an idyllic situation where people put up their tents, and when the cops came every 3 months, they just sort of, Dorothy would let them put their, Dorothy's Place let them put their stuff indoors or hold it off to the side, police would clean it up.
And the Learning Center did the same.
And
so
that really was what happened. So, I mean, that's about the Chinatown situation.
For a while, there wasn't much of a big deal, and Chinatown was the only, you know, piece that anybody looked at. So,
but I'm saying,
just get your stuff stolen from you, no problem.
But Wes, what I'm saying is that citywide, there's obviously a hell of a lot more homeless people than people in Chinatown. Do you have any awareness of those folks, and has their situation changed as a consequence of these laws, one way or the other? Are they pretty much being ignored, and it's the same as they always were? They're being treated like, you know, a debris that's a part of the landscape, as long as it doesn't interfere with the latest economic schemes of the downtown associations.
Right. Well, okay. So after the September 15th and right now, it's pretty well the same stressful situation. You know, it's just pretty well, it's unlawful. So any time or day or night, people can, the city can come and take your belongings. They don't even follow their little notice anymore. That's another thing that goes out the window with their unlawful camping. So they don't have to follow any kind of policies, procedures, anything. You know, and that's pretty simple.
Of course. But in terms of, in other words, the situation pretty much has remained as it's always been with no particular...
No, well, what I was getting at before, I suppose, is there wasn't as much people crowded in other places. Like I guess the housing situation has gotten worse, okay, since whatever...
What situation, I'm sorry?
For people.
Housing situations.
Yes, there were more housed people before, I guess, because there wasn't as much of a tent pop-up until 2013 or something like that. 2011 to 2013, there was a, between those 2 years, Google Earth shots, there's a mass marketed, you know, growth, expansion. So, there wasn't much, you know, I guess it was easier to hide back then, and it was easier. There was a renaissance before the bulky items ordinance.
The bulky items ordinance,
it pretty well cleared the way to
The bulky items ordinance was in the September of 2015?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that was replaced in the spring of 2016 with the move-along ordinance, but it's okay to sleep at night, camp at night ordinance.
Yes.
And that was replaced in September of 2016 with the no camping anywhere. Maybe, can you be more specific about what the current ordinance says?
Okay, so what I know is it's got unlawful camping, which means you can't do anything without a special use permit, and typically those are only given one overnight for once a year, possibly two. But it's basically so they can set up Forbes and already have that situated, because that's a tent as well in the street. And that's something the city sponsored, so they can apply for themselves a special permit.
In the studio with me, Wes, we have Rebecca, who is a person who sleeps in her vehicle while she's holding down job after job and trying to keep things together. How would that impact people sleeping in their vehicles in Salinas?
They go by vehicle code. So right now they've basically been ignoring a lot of people, but if they get one complaint from a business owner or a resident, then they will come and get you.
Use? I mean,
they go, or they'll tow you away because they want to see your registration and everything else, make sure that
Let's suppose you're properly registered and you have your insurance and, you know, you paid all your fines, yada, yada, yada. In Santa Cruz, it's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock in your vehicle, so they can, and they've also posted no parking signs at night all the hell over the place. And they tried to pass an anti-RV law, but they were blocked by some of us who, you know, appealed that to the Coastal Commission, or at least for the moment they're blocked. But what about Salinas? Is there an anti-homeless law about sleeping in your vehicle?
I suppose they don't like it. They use the vehicle code. So they'll use trespassing on you as well. And
if you're in a public street, you're not trespassing. And I'm not aware that the California Vehicle Code says anything about...
You get 3 days.
Well, you can't be in one spot for more than 3 days, but people in a vehicle, provided they can buy the gas, which can be a problem, or keep their car in repair, which can also be a problem, can move from one place to another. But if in Santa Cruz, it doesn't matter where you move to, it's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night in a vehicle, or actually in any structure, quote, not intended for human habitation under the Santa Cruz sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance. So I'm wondering, it sounds like the current camping law in Salinas, I better check it out. I know you've urged me to go read the damn thing, which I haven't done, I guess, since I was at the city council meeting where they passed this sucker and as an emergency legislation.
Right. Only three people knowing anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, I know you've been fighting tickets in court, and I've been, you know, I think you sent me a raft of the, finally you're able to, they wouldn't give you the records, so you had to go in and you had to manually write them down, and they were going to charge you for them. They wouldn't give them to you online, although I'm sure they exist online, and they wouldn't let you photograph them with your iPod or your smartphone or whatever the hell you've got, which is also... Right. I'm pretty sure a violation of the Public Records Act or an unnecessary restriction, which the police department is just using because they don't like, you know, people looking more closely at their operations. What have you found lately among those citations that might be of interest, if anything? And I know it's a pain in the ass to go through and try to methodically come up with some conclusions about masses of data that are in tickets, but have you found anything yet that you want to pass on to us?
Well, you know, one of the most tragic things that I've noticed is the majority of them either settled and they pled out or they got a warrant on. And for an awful lot of people who've got it as a warrant, this is their only charge. So it's piddly nothing. It shouldn't even be, you know, contested. I mean, they should just drop the damn thing.
Give us an example of the kinds of tickets we're talking about.
Having your tent up after 6 a.m., a lot of it is, between February and September last year. And trespassing in a vacant building or a vacant, church or whatever. And they even state, you know, I got nowhere else to go. And so I just needed some shelter. I needed a warrant. And, so that's almost incriminating the officer and the system itself. But, of course, they're not going to care. So 10 after 6, lean to obstructing the sidewalk. And, now they got loitering and public urination. Bicycle jaywalking, they'll get you for jaywalking if they can. I mean, penalty nonsense things. But, if you choose not to go to court, then it follows you. And it eventually catches up to you.
It should be said that these are misdemeanor charges, right? They're not infractions. They're charges.
Yeah, they are misdemeanors, yes.
They're punishable by time in jail, anywhere from 3 months to a year, I guess, depends. I'm not sure what the situation is for your charges.
Right.
But,
up to a year. And so the typical thing when they plead out, they could serve 1 day. They could serve, if they have a hold for a warrant or something. But they could serve 10. But I've seen a lot of them serve between 1 and 3 or 4 even, you get 28 hours to get arraigned. So they, you serve jail time, and then you plead out, you do 220 for a fine, and the worst part is you get 2 or 3 years of informal probation, and don't do it again. Well, how are you not going to do it again in 3 years? It's just a ridiculous...
What kind of strategies has Anthony Prince or have you and others thought about as a response to this attack on people's survival needs? Is this really what it is? Go ahead.
I suppose, the same tried and true issue is you try to motivate people to see something and get get interested to, because it's community that needs the pressure. It's not going to happen from one or two people. And obviously the population we're dealing with is not in the best situation to, do this. I mean, this is an extracurricular activity. You know, a lot of this stuff takes a lot of drive and focus and momentum, and that's got to build from, you know, community involvement. So we got to light a fire somehow, smoke signals.
Indeed. And this, I always find this Martin Luther King Day ceremony a bunch of, I think, as I've told you, essentially.
Well, and we're trying not to make it trite, you know.
Hocus pocus.
We're working off of the Poor People's Campaign leg of it, which was the latest thing he was doing. And that had more to do with poverty and the system, the redlining, the political aspect, you know.
Well, the Poor People's Campaign, you know, they were willing to not just take tickets, but deal with police officers that came and told them to move, and they had to be essentially forcibly removed from Washington, D.C. in the spring and summer of 1968. So, I mean, I don't know if that's relevant to 2016 of people who will, you know, aren't, or 2017, of people who want to kind of, you know, certainly want to speak out against this and oppose it, but aren't interested in A, going to jail even once, and B, going to jail repeatedly, which is what, or moving repeatedly. That's what the First They Came for the Homeless in Berkeley encampment is doing, even, you know, in the last 3 months. They moved 12 times, one place to another. Every time the police come, they pack up their stuff and they move to another place. And this stuff gets stolen, and then community by the police, and community members then come in and replace it. That's what's been happening, because people don't, in Berkeley, at least some people, don't like to see people freezing in the winter. Compliments of their very own police department. Here in Santa Cruz, we apparently don't seem to give a shit, most of us. Anyway.
It's hard to be organized, that's for sure.
What's that?
I said it is hard to be organized.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not, you know, trying to be critical. I'm looking for different avenues. You have some people who have decided to stand up in court. And what's the situation with them? They're being handled with public defenders, as I understand it, or public pretenders, as we like to call them, or as I like to call them.
I suppose I've talked a couple of times, and with the, before there was a public defender, now we have the head public defender, we have another guy, Zach Newhouse, and I've talked with him, and he said he's willing to take him all the way to trial. And, I mean, you know, what more can I ask for than just defend their rights, you know, as long as possible?
Well, I don't know. A decent public defender doesn't just take people to trial. He interviews witnesses. She goes out and, you know, subpoenas documents. It's you know, and I don't know that at least the public pretenders in Santa Cruz do that much around homeless cases. Of course, homeless cases in Santa Cruz have been, you know, made into infractions generally, although there are some misdemeanors if you... you know, if you sleep more than twice in 24 hours and with the intention of remaining overnight, that's a misdemeanor, although I haven't heard of anybody charged with that. What people are only charged with is if you repeat an infraction several times, you know, a serious infraction like sitting next to a building or,
right. So,
you know.
So Cindy knows exactly what they're up to.
What's that?
By passing it this way as an infraction, they know exactly what they're doing.
And, of course, the infraction means you don't get a public defender, you don't get a trial, a jury trial anyway, yeah. You get a trial in front of a judge, and supposedly you don't get time in jail, but you do get the same thing hanging over your head in Santa Cruz, which they have, which says that if you get 3 infractions in 6 months, then every subsequent infraction is a misdemeanor, and they can then charge you with a misdemeanor for those 3 infractions, for having if you don't attend them in court. I mean, it's okay. In other words, you have to scurry on down to court when you're not trying to make enough money to pay for the gas in your car, or, you know, buy the tent that was taken away by the police, or by, you know, stolen by somebody else, because there's a lot of inter-homeless theft in Santa Cruz, and as things get tougher, then, you know, you don't make it to court. And if you don't make it to court 3 times, then it goes to, you have, a huge surcharge is put on, tickets go south, mm-hmm. or wherever the hell they go, Sacramento maybe San Diego, and then a new crime gets charged against you. Or at least that's the threat they use. And a lot of this stuff I find, and maybe you find this in Salinas, and I'm wondering if this is true, is really a bullying threat to drive homeless people away. Get the hell out of town is the issue. And I'm going to invite Rebecca, not pressure her at all, but if you want to say anything, Rebecca, feel free to to chime in, because you've been having these experiences. Wes and I are not homeless, you know, so, or as you might say, we are not experiencing homelessness or living in our vehicles, if you will. And so if you decide you want to say something about this.
Well, I definitely believe that.
Although I did live in my car for 6 months when I first got to Salinas in 2011.
Indeed. Go ahead, Rebecca.
I definitely believe that there is a certain amount of driving people away. And I noticed it, you know, in other cities as well that I've lived in over the past 10 years.
What cities are those, Rebecca?
Pismo Beach, California. Cities in Arizona, Grants Pass, Oregon, South Dakota, there wasn't really much, problems there, you know, with homelessness. It was a very small town, but Indianapolis, when I got there, it seemed as if like half of the homes were boarded up. There was already a mass, exodus from that city when I got there for the 2 winters, and I didn't really get involved, and I didn't have the homeless problem. I don't know if I want to call it that, but you know what I mean. Until I got back to Santa Cruz, and the only reason why I even ended up going to all those places was because I was kind of pushed out. I was definitely pushed out of Santa Cruz. I couldn't make enough money to stay here. And so, you know, at the time, I didn't have any problem trying to find another place to go. And I'd always hoped that, you know, something would work out. But I end up back in Santa Cruz again. And then, you know, this time is when the sleeping in my car started, you know, the last 3 years.
Wes, how many people would you say... how many homeless people actually have vehicles they sleep in? What percentage of the population that's outside sleeps in vehicles?
A percentage, I guess, we're about to have another homeless census at the end of the month. But 2 years ago, I think they said there was about 700 people here. There's, you know, chronically homeless. And that number's probably grows to 900,000. A debt, and a percentage, 10% would be 90, so probably less than that, maybe 50 or 60. And you know, people have to drive around there. I've read cases where, you know, they park behind Walmart, and you're allowed to. Walmart's one of those places where they'll let you stay, for a while. And honestly, they have security patrol, but. They'll let you stay for a few days, but if you stay there too long, then they want you to leave. And where else, there are places, two bars, that, you know, will give permission, temporary permission. And otherwise, you just park on the street and hope that you don't end up with, someone complaining.
So if in Salinas, if a person complains, it doesn't matter if you're completely legal.
I had a friend, a lady in her 50s and two young daughters, going to junior high, and they were in an RV and they just parked not even an hour in, and then they got, you know, cops on her. And, you know, it's a lady with two girls, and, you know, we're just trying to stay safe, trying to find a little hidey hole, and you know, that's what you do. You try to find a little nook and cranny, and...
You know, you hear of people resisting this kind of abuse, the notion that people in houses have the right to dictate how public spaces are used around them completely, even when it's clear that the laws do not back them up. I mean, it's completely legal in some cities, Palo Alto, for example, now, to sleep in your vehicle, or Southern California. in some cases because of the Desert Train decision, to, you know, to live in your vehicle, unless they are putting up particular signage against this. But a complaint from a neighbor brings the police, and the police will, you know, encourage you to move along. Or in Salinas, do they in fact cite you, or is there any people who resist this kind of stuff that you've heard of in Salinas? Any rebels who stand up and say, no thanks, I'm not moving along? There are some people who do this in different cities. They often get more publicity because they're taking their cases to court, and, you know, they get some support from other people for doing it and so forth. You there?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, I'm asking, do you know of anybody who said, no, I'm not moving my vehicle, I haven't been here 72 hours, I'm registered, and I'm fine, you know, bug off.
Nope.
Nope. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've encouraged people in Santa Cruz, though I don't sleep in my vehicle, to do that if they're in fact legal, but also to be aware that it may make them a target, or alternately, it may make them not a target, because the police may decide. I know, for example, Pat Colby, who sleeps in her vehicle, Pat and John Colby. As far as I know, police leave them alone because the minute they start harassing them, they will start calling every agency they can think of, write letters in triplicate to every congressman, including the Republican idiots and the Democratic sellouts, everybody they can think of. And, you know, it's not something that the authorities want to deal with. And it's not that they're going to get any meaningful responses, but the noise they make drives away the police. And that is a positive thing if the police are engaging in abusive behaviors. Any thoughts on that one, Rebecca?
Well, I realized that when I would be come up on by the police, it always helped if I was just brutally honest. And, you know, I remember the first time was, and, you know, I got out of my car and I basically told them the straight out truth. I am a direct support professional. I take care of people with developmental disabilities. I am sleeping in my car. And they have generally probably appreciated the fact that I was just honest. And, you know, of course, they ask, oh, do you have any drugs in the car? And the answer is always no. Of course not. I'm, you know.
Can we search your car, please?
They don't say that to me.
And what do you say if they did?
I'd say no.
Well, what have you got to hide if you're an innocent person?
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. You have a right to your privacy.
Right.
Is the answer.
Right. What do you have to look for if I'm innocent?
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm asking for is, see, there is a theory that, well, if the police really are mellow about it in the most basic way, and they in essence are saying to the neighbors, we don't want, you know, when the neighbors say, we don't want that ugly-looking van in our neighborhood, and they say, well, you know, we'll ask them to, you know, they'll tell them that there's a problem, or that you don't like what the color of their van, or the thought that they might be around, and you have small children who might be, you know, horrified to see a person in their vehicle and so forth. And after all, they might be sex perverts or drug users or something, you know, because they're homeless. The question is if the person is willing to move and move to different places, and the police are willing to essentially just say, move to a slightly different place and we'll let it go, and really let it go. But the problem is the police, as far as I've seen from the accounts I've gotten, don't do that. They will tell you to move, and then if they find you again, they'll act as though you're doing something wrong because you didn't leave the area. And that isn't always true. I mean, their police are, I would say, in some cases, are compassionate towards some individuals, or at least they ignore them, which I suppose is a form of compassion if you're not going to harass them. And you can work out, some people can work out a working arrangement with the police department in the sense that they know you. Okay, we know this person. Yeah, they sleep in their car. Yeah, well, just make sure they don't, if somebody complains, they have to move. They don't, of course. Under the law, they don't have to move. See, that's the point. And the problem is the police are the enforcers of these non-law class-based prejudices that are used. Am I being too strong in my statement here?
No.
No, you're being very accurate.
Okay. I mean, it is true. If you and people have to keep a low profile if they want to survive in their cars often, but they shouldn't have to.
I made a point of it. I did not at all want to have anything in my car that made it look like I was sleeping in my car.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it worked out for me, you know, because I wasn't really harassed by the police. I was harassed by other people because my car is kind of noticeable, and you know, people did start to recognize it, I think, but that's besides the point. I definitely knew already, I mean, and I would see other people in their car, and you know, you'd make frequent trips to go vacuum it out, and you know, I thought it would be a good thing to try to not look like I was sleeping in my car.
Oh, yeah, a lot of, I mean, understandable. Or not look
and
like you're homeless when you're walking.
I would see other people pull all this stuff out of their car, and I didn't quite understand, you know, like, let's, you know, be tidy, you know, or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, remember, people are, you know, are not always in the best of shape, and it's hard to pack your life into a car or a backpack, or I'm told. I don't do it, so I don't know. We're talking with Wes White and Rebecca. Wes White's in Salinas. Rebecca's in the studio. You can't call in at this point, but when we leave, Wes, you'll be able to call in. We are not live on the air, but we are live on the stream here at Free Radio, freakradio.org. And if you want to leave me a message off air, if you have any comments about what you're hearing, if you want to give any reports about how police are treating people in Santa Cruz or other areas, you can leave a message at 831-423-4833. That's 423-4833. That's the Huff line, 423-HUFF. So, Wes, what's the current status of the legal cases that you are following in Salinas for those who are willing to come back to court and fight these criminalization of the homeless charges?
Well, let's see. So a few people have gone and they've been arraigned. They've gone. The very first thing that happened was they didn't plead. They went to a demur motion and basically saying that we were politically targeted and we should just throw the case based on that. And, of course, they shot that down and said no. So that went on. There is one guy that's going to trial.
Let me interrupt you here, because that's something that rarely happens in Santa Cruz. A demur motion is a motion that claims that the very charge that a person is charged with is improper in some fundamental way. So a person doesn't have to plead guilty or not guilty because the charge is either incoherent or it's unconstitutional to start with, you know, or it's unduly vague. Therefore, you can't really defend yourself against it, and that means that no trial is necessary, and the judge will, they suppose, dismiss it short of court. But those kinds of proceedings, having a public defender who will actually do that for you, is a rarity. Is it something that's done regularly in Salinas? I mean, are public defenders doing that with a case of unhoused folks?
I think they might get a little bit of hinting, you know, in that direction. I don't think it was really necessarily... you know, I think we've made cases, you know, pled our position to them well enough and received a empathetic, compassionate audience in the public defender's office. So I think they've been interested in helping to defend these cases.
Right, but have they been doing demurs on a regular basis?
No, I don't think so.
So in the case of how many or a couple of, you say this is one case where they did do a demur and it was turned down.
Well, that's been the cycle of events. That's how you started.
Okay,
so for everybody's case, that's how it's been starting.
And these are under the old laws, not under the current no camping period law that passed in September, but under the earlier no camping after 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it hasn't developed far enough yet. Diana just got arraigned on the 23rd of November, and I think, I'm not sure exactly when she's going back, I think early February or something. So, you know, I mean, everything takes time, right? to go from one...
No, it shouldn't take 3 months to go from November to February unless Diana allows it. You can demand a speedy trial within 45 days, period. There's no... Well, I mean, that's just how you... On a misdemeanor, it's within 45 days. If you're in jail, it's within 30 days. And if it's a felony, I think it's within 60 days. But I don't know what, you know.
I wonder why time is.
Well, she waived time. She probably said, I will allow our wonderful public defender's office the opportunity to do nothing for 3 months, is what she probably did. So, you know, I don't know. I can't say. You got to keep your eyes on these clowns. They, you know, I mean, and I'm not saying that the public defenders are probably very much overworked, and we always hear this, and it's probably true, but, you know, it doesn't matter. That's what they're fucking paid to do, and they better damn well do it, because they're in a much better situation than the folks who they're defending, and they're getting paid to do it. That's the point. They're getting paid. Other people have to suffer, and they're supposed to be addressing these issues according to the law. And I don't think generally that's the case for poor people.
No, well, you know, it's all brokered punishment. That's what they're there for, brokering your punishment. How much punishment you want, you know?
I mean, I know public defenders often will tell the unhoused person, you know, oh, well, you know, it's your word against the police officers, you know. It's your word. You haven't got any witnesses. Your witnesses won't come to court because they're afraid or they're too busy damn well getting other services they need to get, or they're not, their health isn't the best, whatever reasons there are. But anyway, yeah, I think Diana can demand immediate action, and I don't know why Anthony hasn't advised her that, Anthony Prince, the attorney who's supposedly, you know, dealing with this stuff. I imagine, you know, he doesn't, well, I don't know what I imagine. I know that you're also working on a thing called the Union of the Homeless in Salinas. And you kind of signed up a lot of people for this kind of resistance when you were fighting with the so-called flagpole community, which was a group of people.
It started with the first ordinance. We sent around some petitions called.
Right. What's happened to that list that you had of people with emails and phone numbers, which admittedly probably is, you know, many dead ends, but is it? Is anybody on that list actively interested in helping you? Because I know you're alone. You feel overwhelmed. I've heard it, you know, many times when we've talked, and I can appreciate that.
All right. Well, you know, since you're asking, I've got a stack of pages that are mixed in with a lot of, you know, names and stuff. So I just need to start.
No, you need support. I don't think you need to do anything. You're doing a lot as it is. And I think, let me give you the last word here. I'm going to do a musical break. I don't know what your schedule is like. You're welcome to stay for some more of this discussion, but, I'm...
I got to do my homework somehow.
not sure. Let's take a breather and I'll be right back, and you can too, or you can call back. You can listen in and call back. In fact, let me...
Well, I don't want to hog your time.
It's not, yeah, it's not that you're hogging my time. It's, I should probably do some of the interviews from people in Santa Cruz that I've garnered over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and I think I'll do that, and I'll call this, I'll say sayonara to you there, Wes.
Okay.
But I've still got Rebecca here in the studio. She may choose to stay. I'm not sure what her situation is. Anything you want to conclude with?
Well, you know, like you said, we're having that shindig in Chinatown on the 16th, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It'll either be at the Dorothy's Healthcare Clinic, Chinatown Healthcare Clinic, or the CSUMB Learning Center. One way or another, it won't be hard to find. Just go down to Soledad Street. And, you know, we're going to have a lot of speakers from Santa Cruz and Salinas and along Monterey Bay. So I think it's going to be helpful. I think it's going to be working towards some serious solutions instead of just going to wah, complain. We're going to try to, you know, push the government to do its job.
And you're going to march on City Hall, occupy the building, and sleep overnight there afterward, right?
That sounds exciting. I'm not sure, you know, if the audience will be ready for it at that moment, but that'd be great.
Indeed.
I'll go.
And I might go. I don't know. Thanks, Wes, for calling in. And if people want to reach you, how can they find you?
Well, we have a Facebook page, the Monterey County Homeless Advocate. And that, and then we also have another Facebook page, Salinas Tent City. And they, you know, we're just trying to help. So also, there's going to be a homeless guy. I don't think that people will be, you know, targeted. But there's a survey. Like I said, every once every couple of years, you do a count, and it seems pretty important. I guess I bought into it if it's a lie. But I seriously think that it would be helpful to have hard numbers as much as it's gobbledygook to convince people who don't want to do anything anyway. You know, it would be good. There's homeless guys are needed on January 25th, which is a Wednesday. And they, if you were formerly homeless or currently homeless, they are willing to pay $15 an hour. And, you know, it's a little bit of money, and it's really easy to do. All you got to do is count.
Right, so that the people with the much bigger salaries can make like they're doing something for homeless services that they're not later on. Yeah, I'm familiar with that whole thing. But on the other hand, I agree with you. It's nice to get some stats, however undercounting they are in these stats. Yeah. Or,
and yeah. Apparently, because I went to this meeting and yesterday, the downtown community board meeting, and the Coalition of Homeless Service Providers lady was, you know, like talking exactly about that, how they weren't able to count people even though that they knew they were there, and how do you count people at, you know, in the morning when everything's closed up and people are still sleeping? Well, check for shoes outside. Are you kidding me? You know, who's going to leave their shoes outside? So, you know, it's just and overlooking lots of people, even RVs, they were trying to see how they get people in RVs counted too. So it sounded like, you know, they were making efforts, and I really didn't feel the emptiness in there, as I do for some other thing, and maybe I'm not looking as hard as you.
I don't know. I don't volunteer for these things. I suspect the people who are organizing this are getting 3 or 4 and 5 or 15 times the salaries that the people, you know, the peons that they send out on the streets are getting. So,
well, peon, as in a group of two. I think they moved up to having 6 people. But yes, they are paid, When you turn it into how much do you get paid rather than how much is your passion, you know, the people who get paid win.
Well, I'm going to leave it there, and I will talk to you again, Wes.
All right. We'll see you, man.
You take care, babe. Bye-bye. And let's take a musical break, and I'll be back with Rebecca and whoever calls in. 427-3772 is the call-in number. 427-3772. You will be live on the stream if you call.
Well, I've been down. by the famous Kirchhoff pendulum swing, which was created in 2007, perhaps.
And what I'm talking about, and you were just listening to Skidmark Bob, another one of the old-time free radio broadcasters, who he was around when we actually had a transmitter set up. We could do it. We are missing that now, and we want one. So if you know of a place where we can put up a transmitter site on a tall house, doesn't be that tall, just two stories, or a tree, plus a place to put a shack that we can, a small shack, which we will create. We will pay you for the electricity. We will pay you for the internet. And we will be on the air again. Think of that. You could actually, you know, tell your children that you, yes, you helped Free Radio Santa Cruz, and it's for difficult days. If you're interested, go to freakradio.org, which you may be at right now listening to this show, and let us know, because if you've got any ideas, we need them. If you've seen any prospects, if you have any friends who have prospects, if you are going to be talking to, if you have a group of people that you visit on a weekly basis of different, whatever their function is, when you get together with them, ask them if any of them has an interest in free radio. And if they do, we need access to an antenna space. We're also looking for a studio space, too, where we need to. We're looking for a studio space separate from the antenna space. That's a place where we can actually do what I'm doing now, which is talk to you from a relatively comfortable position. Well, I wouldn't call it quite comfortable, but it's not as uncomfortable as it might be. For many months, we were outside of a studio, didn't have a studio space at all. And it cut down on our broadcasters, and it made it difficult to continue, and it would be difficult again. And we are due to lose our studio space within a month, month and a half. So we need that, too. So studio space can be anywhere in the Santa Cruz area, 10-by-10 space, inside a building somewhere. It could even be outside a building if we had access to the internet, and we also need access to a bathroom for the studio space. Those are two different things we're looking for, a transmitter site and a studio space. We're willing to pay for both, and we will celebrate you in song and story, or we'll keep your name very quiet if that's what you'd rather have. What I just interrupted, though, was a brief beginning of a description of the pendulum swing downtown. You may have seen it. It's a big ball that swings back and forth like a pendulum in front of, I think it's Betty's Good Things to Eat. I'm not quite sure the exact name of that hamburger joint down on Pacific Avenue. But it's a swing that kids push and people push. And when people who are raggedy or the police don't like push it, they give them tickets. And they've recently put in a new sign there. And that's what I'm talking about don't you dare push this pendulum, though that's exactly what it was put there for. So let's hear a little of that and send some more street interviews. Plus some comments from Rebecca, who's going to give us some thoughts, too.
At least that's the number that's on the sign in front of the Betty's Eat In. And there's a new sign on the fence around it that was moved 4 inches by the Pacific Trading Company and the police department 13 years ago in order to stop Cosmic Chris and other performers from hanging out here. The sign says, "Do not touch or climb on display." And my response to that, if I had more energy, would be to jump up on the display and move the pendulum. But I'm weary tonight, and we'll have to wait until another time. We're in front of New Leaf Market, listening to some singing by a guy we met a few minutes ago, accompanied by violin, and the hula hoop performer. So I'm just gonna keep drifting like a leaf in the wind. I'm just gonna keep drifting like a leaf in the wind. I said, I'm just gonna keep drifting like a leaf in the wind. sort of get the gist of it.
And that was in front of New Leaf Market, right next to the kiosk that sits in front of New Leaf Market on Pacific Avenue, for those of you who know downtown Santa Cruz. It used to be an area where people performed regularly, and now it's been barred as performing with a display device in front of you, that is, say, a cup or an open guitar case or a little table, whatever. It's illegal to do that, though there have been some folks who have suggested that people be directed to place their donations on the sidewalk, and then you can perform anywhere. I haven't seen that used or whether the police would accept that as a challenge. It does seem to be within the law, but then again, the police are often not really interested in the law, but rather in their own standards as to what they think is appropriate. So let's hear a little more of, here's some stuff from Freedom Sleep Out 77. That's the Freedom Sleep Out where folks were sleeping in front of City Hall to protest the law that makes it illegal for homeless people or people experiencing homelessness or people living in their vehicles, for that matter, to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. And this is something that, folks have done every week, every Tuesday night, since the summer of 2015 in order to demand a change in the law. And this is will be happening again. Freedom Sleep 79 should be coming up next Tuesday. And here's something that happened Tuesday before last. I'm going to hear a little of that, and then I'm going to pause to give Rebecca some opportunity to give her thoughts on all this stuff, and plus some other thoughts she's been thinking about around the business of, I guess, living in a vehicle and being outside.
Talking with...
Anonymous.
And you say that you've been across the street when the police came in the morning at the last few protests?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, it just surprises me that six paid police officers have to show up here at 5 in the morning to cite a peaceful protest of people sleeping. Everybody knows what's going on, and I don't understand why they would waste the taxpayers' money coming here, writing a bunch of tickets that aren't going to even get paid.
Do you think they're driving people away, or do you think that people are continuing to come back?
No, I think they're attracting people. I think more people are showing up, yeah.
Because they're pissed about it?
Well, I don't know if they're pissed. It's just, you know, it's just like...
An historic event?
Yeah, it's a historical event. They want to be part of it. Mm-hmm. So I think they're causing more people to come. So
we should thank them.
We should thank them, absolutely.
Well, I expect you, I'm not going to be here, but you might. I want you to say thank you very much, officer.
All I do know is that you can't sleep on the bricks, you know.
No, I mean, after all, it could damage the bricks. This is pretty sensitive.
This is actually a park. This is a park.
There they are now, passing by, keeping an eye on things.
This is a park, and you can't be in the park after hours. That's the whole premises. So,
I've heard that one before, actually.
But all parks that I've seen have grass in them. This one doesn't.
They used to, but they took it all out.
Ah, why is that?
Well, you know, you don't want these lazy homeless people sleeping on the grass.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Put in bark dust and shrubs.
That makes more sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's less more maintenance.
Yeah, plus...
Look, you ain't got no homeless people laying around.
Exactly, amen.
And what we're talking about is the situation at the City Hall area in the courtyard where, at a cost of I don't know how many thousands of dollars, they removed the entire lawn area that people used to relax on and which the Freedom Sleepers slept on in the fall of 2015. And they put in these ornamental flowers and, I guess, I don't know, with sawdust or bark, and various cement structures. You may have seen it, Rebecca, at City Hall. It's,
I did not.
Yeah, let me give you put up your mic.
Not.
Yeah, and their attempt is to make it illegal to be at City Hall generally, so they can claim they can get rid of protesters without actually going after the protests specifically and risking legal liabilities because they're going after First Amendment protected activity, peaceful protesting. What they do then is they cram everybody onto the sidewalk and off of the brick area, which is just adjacent to the sidewalk, which they have arbitrarily designated as a park. But that doesn't stop people. I know at Freedom Sleep Out 78, which was two nights ago when the rain was coming down in buckets, I went over there around 9:30 or 10 at night when it was illegal to be in the quote, park after dark, that is under the eaves of the city hall, and there was 14 people there in tents and sleeping bags and wrapped up in blankets. And I don't know if the police came later that night. I'm still waiting to get a report 2 days later, and we'll see what the situation was there. Any thoughts about any of this, Rebecca, that you want to pass on? Or?
Well, I had a question. I can't hear myself.
I think you're... Say something.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, let's... now can you hear yourself?
Yeah, better.
Okay.
Not that I have to hear myself. I don't know.
We want you to hear yourself.
Okay. Well, I had a question that I remember in one stint when I was in my car, and I have met a lot of other people, obviously, that were living in their car as well. And I did hear at one time that apparently there was a law that was passed that made it legal in the entire state of California to sleep in your car.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, because apparently some senator or congressman was getting it, after a long day and wanted to sleep for a little while before he drove home and was ticketed. And then I guess got upset and, created this law and that it was passed. But then I didn't hear anything about it. That was probably over like a year and a half ago that I
heard
it.
As far as I know, Rebecca, I know that 4 years ago or so, there were laws introduced into the state legislature asking to establish what's called a homeless bill of rights, which would, one of those would be the right to sleep in your vehicle if you have no place to go or just... because it's your vehicle and you're not harming anyone. And that didn't make it out of the assembly. It didn't make it up to the Senate, the higher, so-called higher body of the House of Misrepresentatives in Sacramento.
Well, so, I guess it sounded too good to be true.
It's usually the advances are mainly through the courts. So some jurisdictions have stopped harassing people in their vehicles. Because the federal courts, and mostly it's the federal courts, have ruled that they've come in on the side, who knows what will happen under the Trump administration, but they've come in under the side of saying finally, and they aren't doing anything about it, they aren't taking the matter up on behalf of people outside, but they're saying that it seems to us that if there's no legal place for people to go and you tell them they can't sleep and they can't sleep anywhere, this is a violation of their status as a person who is outside, is in a vehicle, has no place to go. And that doesn't mean they're not doing anything wrong. That's something they can't control.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it's a status crime, and therefore, it's a violation of due process. I'm not quite sure how that works, but that's the phrase they use, or equal protection of the laws. I'm not quite sure how that works either, but that's the 14th Amendment. And also the Fifth Amendment, part of the Fifth Amendment, which is a big amendment that's not only, you don't have to testify against yourself, but it's a bunch of other things, too, in the federal Constitution. The Constitution is, I think it's overly hyped as being something to protect people. It protects, it used to protect wealthy white male slaveholders. That's who it was designed, or merchants designed to protect. That's how it was created.
It sounds like nothing's changed.
Not much. It is true that that people rising up have created rights for working people. The vote for women, although who do you get to vote for? Good grief. And also massive civil rights movements have removed some disabilities for African Americans, and now they just jail them instead or shoot them on the streets, depending on the preference of the moment.
Right.
So it's... There is a decision I mentioned it before, the Desert Drain decision in Los Angeles that threw out the laws that criminalize people for sleeping in vehicles, but it doesn't mean that police aren't still trying to enforce them. In Santa Cruz, they continue to have these laws. In fact, they wanted to ban RVs citywide and countywide. And we had to go to the Coastal Commission to get that stalled, and whether it's going to stay stalled, I don't know. But I have heard recently that they have not been giving out tickets. But the tickets that they did give out, they're not giving anybody's money back, which, of course, they should do, particularly for people who live in their vehicles. It would don't have a lot of money. You're not very wealthy, are you?
No, of course not.
I don't think so, no. Should we hear some more? Or did you want to say some more?
I also had a thought about, have you heard about how Utah is basically building homes and giving them to their homeless?
Well, I have heard it said that, this actually has been a big a PR campaign, or not necessarily a PR campaign, but it has been bruited about that Utah somehow has massively reduced its homeless population through providing services. And I've gotten contradictory information on that, so I can't give you an authoritative answer that's really specific, and that's really what you need if you want to look into this. But
I did hear about it, and I even remember seeing, of course, how much can you believe when you watch stuff on television? But, of course, it's something I would like to believe.
Well,
that
contact the Utah Homeless Civil Rights Groups and find out what they say. That's my suggestion.
Giving, and I I'm not a political person at all.
I mean, the answer is I don't think so. If you want my real opinion, no, I don't think they are doing that much. I mean, they're claiming to reduce homelessness by great amounts. According to what I've heard from people who've been to Utah, one person who's been to Utah, and maybe from some online reading, the answer is no. It's not that it's a lie. It's that, I can't give you a good answer. My feeling is that that's not the case. But if you
I saw an interview of someone who was claiming that they were given a home.
Oh yeah, I mean that could be. There's I'm not saying
their belief is that most people can't really flourish or do anything.
That's the whole housing
without
first.
Having a home.
That's
base.
The whole housing first notion. That, you give people a house, even if they have an alcohol or a drug problem. If you give them access to a home, they're far more likely to be able to come out of that situation than to say, "Well, you got to be clean and sober first." Well, good luck with that. Mm-hmm. I agree with that too.
I do too, and that's part of what I'm trying to say right now is that I don't know how people, different people become people that are without a house. I don't know how all this happens. I know how it happened for me, and I know that my situation is not at all the same as most of the people that are living in this kind of situation here in Santa Cruz.
Well, I think some of it's domestic abuse. I think some, particularly for women, I think some of it is this rent situation.
Absolutely.
I mean, it sounds like, your situation is not that unusual. It is. It's why numerous people are in that situation. A lot of people like to say, I'm doing this because I choose this. It's a free and exciting lifestyle. But if you ask them more closely, you'll find that they got driven out by the rents. They're displaced urban residents somewhere along the line. Or they had health problems that had to cost too much. Or that they tried, the situation became difficult for them to manage. And it's fashionable among those who don't want to see homeless people around to say, this is all their fault. They're a bunch of bums.
Exactly.
They're a bunch of,
So that brings me to the thought of, I see it on both sides. I think that everybody is the problem. I think that the people like me who have been sleeping in my car for, the last 8 months of this year and prior to that for the last 3 years, I did everything I possibly could to find out what I could do, how I could do it. I worked as much as I could, there's no doubt, to try to save the money, to get a place. And, I've used the county, of course, as much as I possibly can to get help, called all these different places. And a lot of the times I realized I felt like that I was really only being helped to stay homeless rather than help to get an actual place to live.
Yeah, I mean, these so-called homeless services, which I there's a reason I call the Coral Street area the homeless lack of services center.
Right.
Because they are not providing shelter for a significant number of people. They've cut off meals to people. They've established a prison-like atmosphere, and they're spending most of their money on controlling the population that's there. They criminalize the population around the homeless centers, saying they want a no-impact zone around them. And they do all this the same time while panhandling for money from the government and private sources in order to continue their operation. And that's a somewhat slanted view of it. I mean, there's another side that says, well, they do provide two meals a day to people in the programs. They do try to find housing in Watsonville or places outside Santa Cruz. They're a get-the-fuck-out-of-town organization under gentler, kindler rhetoric, you know. That's how I view it. Shall I play a little more, or you want to say something else?
Well, I want to, you know, honestly, personally, I need to wrap up and go see my dog. Haven't seen him all day long.
That's Biggie Smalls, yes.
It's an 88-pound bull mastiff.
Well, next time you should bring him in and we can chat with Biggie.
I would love to do that. I thought about it. I should have done that tonight, but,
you're trying to, you weren't sure. It might have been a rug here or something.
He would have eventually lied down and, you know, just continued to stare at me all night long. Which
that's
what
nice.
He does. Yeah. He didn't want me to leave, and he did want to come, but because I'd been gone all
Well,
day,
next time Biggie is invited, of course.
That's great. So, you know, my alias or my rhyming name, I don't know, my performance name is Bertha G. And I have recently written, just in the past week or so, another small rhyme that is a little bit valid in this particular circumstance because, you know, I want to help any way that I can.
Let's hear it.
And in the way that I feel like I can help is really just to try to help everyone to be a little bit more positive about everything, you know. And if I were to be able to have anything to say to the people that are homeless is, if you don't want to be homeless anymore, do whatever it is that you can do to eventually make that so. And then on the other side of that, what I would like to say to the other people that have a home is, if you have an extra room or a garage, I don't think there's anything wrong with thinking about the idea of helping a person who does not have a home. Even if for some strange reason they can't pay you any rent. So I know it sounds, off the wall and crazy and, you know, far-fetched, like no one's ever going to do that. But, it could go both ways. It could be far-fetched to tell the person who's homeless to get themselves out of it, as well as it's far-fetched to tell a person who has a home to say, hey, open up your home and try to help people
far-fetched to say stop spending money on nuclear weapons and other murderous foreign wars and start spending it on housing so that there's actually it drives the rents down again because there's more housing available. Not at all far-fetched.
Or all far-fetched to tell a person who's, you know, doing homeless and is in that position because they've spent all their money on drugs. Stop doing drugs. So
I don't think people are homeless because they spend all their money on drugs, mostly.
I'm not trying to generalize.
I think people medicate once they get homeless because it's a pretty miserable situation. I haven't got any stats on that.
I don't have any either. But, you know, anyways, so here's...
Let's hear that rhyme.
Well, there is actually a little verse from the song. I don't know if this is okay to do that I ran into.
We may have to arrest you for this.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
From Stairway to Heaven. Okay. It's the last verse. Oh, wait. That's the... that I felt, you know, we need to go back to these old songs and listen to the words again. Some of them are, and I don't want to say old, of course, because I was still around when this song first came out. But, we are probably talking to a lot of majority of the people that are under the age of 30 you know, that are living in their cars or whatnot. And so, you know, we have to think, you know, a little bit like them.
Read
so
that
in this, in the, okay. Anyways, this is the verse from Stairway to Heaven. As we wind on down the road, our shadows taller than our soul, there walks a lady we all know who shines white light and wants to show how everything still turns to gold. And if you listen very hard, the tune will come to you at last, when all are one and one is all, to be a rock and not to roll. So, you know, anyways, just a little bit of positivity trying to spread here a little bit. And then this is my most recent rhyme. Not that anyone was wondering, but I'm doing okay. Not that you wanted to hear, but I've got something to say. You probably wish my lips were sealed or that I'd just walk away. Something bad has happened to me, and I think you all need to pay attention to what's really going on, because I'm planning to stay. Not interested in the way you think things should be. Your opinion is invalid. It means nothing to me. My life is my own, and unless you're a tree with roots in the ground, you'd better just leave me alone for me to be me. I don't need your help to decipher what's wrong and what's right. In fact, it's you that needs me because you lost your sight. It's simple and easy. It won't take me all night to remind you of how you got into this plight. Don't lie, don't steal, don't cheat, don't kill. And come on, everybody, now let's be real. Don't do meth or crack or cocaine. Can't everyone just chill? Drugs are bad, okay? And even though I don't do them, I'm still the one that gets ill. And just for the record, prostitution is wrong. It's gotten out of hand and why I write this song. It's a friendly reminder of our world's oldest laws to help us figure out how we got our flaws. We think we can get away with just any old thing, that no one will notice just one little fling. But we do, and it'll go down in her story, too, about how you lied and cheated like and treated everyone like poo. Especially me, and then you say you had nothing to do with the backlash that I experienced because, according to you, I mean nothing and it's okay if my life is through. But while I'm at it, I might as well say, where'd everyone's sense of humor go? Did it just walk away? Was it stolen or did it die in the plague? You know, the plague that developed in the most recent years, the one that's engulfed everyone in their own fears, the plague that stops us from being divine, has us drowning in tears. And that's as far as I've gone.
Good. I like it better than the earlier one.
Okay.
Keep it up.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Beck, we'll have to have you back when you've done your revised version. We've been listening to Rebecca, a.k.a. Bertha G.
Yes.
And you've heard Wes White and me, of course, the very fine Robert Norris. You can hear yourself on Free Radio 2. Get in touch with me off air. If you got stories to report, information, you want to help out, if you're interested in... helping to overcome these. I'm mainly attacking the bad laws and the nasty practices and the prejudices. I'm leaving it to others to struggle with the social services, except insofar as they're abusive or discriminatory, because that interests me. And I have a very kind of take a personal focus on it. But if any of that interests you and you want to be of assistance, I need help with public records work. I need help with web work. I need help with if we ever get it together, some more actual direct protesting work. Give me a call off air, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And, of course, as you've heard several times in this show, this radio program is likely to disappear into the mist if we don't find ourselves both another studio by the end of February and a transmitter site. We may have one now, but we're not really entirely certain about that. And we may need another one, or we may need one just to continue, because as you may know,